Welcome to the Winding Roads Companion Podcast. I am your host, Catherine Lewiston, and I have with me in the studio, Ken Workowski. Ken, can you introduce yourself?
Well, my name's Ken Workowski. We've lived in the area here for 38, 39 years now. Mm-hmm. I really feel it was kind of serendipitous. I didn't realize when we bought land here and moved here that so many wonderful things were birthed here already. Everything from just the private entrepreneurship that's in the area, or the birth of Organic Valley. I went to some of the first meetings when they were just then some young hippie type guys that were growing organic produce and say, yeah. Hey, we ought to get ourselves together and then we can supply some stores with it.
Yeah.
And crop was born and eventually Organic Valley and the Waldorf School,
mm-hmm.
all of these things, I just felt it was really serendipitous that we've moved into such a area yeah. because it fits very well with our passion in life and our lifestyle.
Great. And you keep saying our, so you have a partner named...
Yep, my wife, Michelle. We've been together for 51 years now.
Congratulations. That's incredible.
Raised three kids, and without her, I wouldn't have got half as far as I have.
Oh, 51 years.
Yeah, a long time.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well done.
It hasn't always been easy, but it's worked.
Sure. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And so where were you before you moved here to the Driftless?
In central Wisconsin,
okay.
Princeton, Green Lake area, which is about 100 miles east of here.
Okay.
That's where I grew up.
Okay.
And we had lived there for some years and just wanted to buy land. Back then, in 1986, we purchased our land for $250 an acre.
Are you kidding me, Ken?
You know, besides the aesthetic beauty of the land here,
yeah,
it was literally dirt cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
And it made it affordable for us.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Well, it's so cool to... I love hearing stories like yours, people who came... to this region like in the 70s, in the 80s, in the early 90s, because it really seems like a lot of the, like I'm a newcomer. This is my first year here in the region.
Okay.
And so many of the really beautiful things that I came here and now enjoy were, like you said, sort of birthed in that era.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful thing to now see some of those institutions still going strong and still standing.
Yeah.
It's really,
yeah.
really cool.
Another thing I admire is the private entrepreneurship is one thing, but it seems to me it's unusual that the businesses have got community support and they've been able to make a go of it. You know?
And
you just don't see that very often.
It is remarkable... per capita, the number of small businesses, the number of like really kind of niche craft small businesses that really thrive in this region. Yeah, there is a very strong network of community around those.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I just admire that in people that have an idea, something they want to do, mm-hmm. and you know, take the bull by the horns and make it happen.
Yeah.
It's beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this for some reason is just a very friendly place for that to happen.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So why don't we speak a little bit about your work specifically, yours and Michelle's. I'm curious to know, did this craft that you practice, furniture making and decorative pieces, sculptural pieces, when did that start?
Oh boy. Goes back a long ways.
Yeah.
I started making willow furniture. If you're mm-hmm. familiar with the bent willow furniture, that was in 1977. I built my first piece, and in 1978, decided to try to make a business out of it. And for probably 15 years or so, that's all I did was willow furniture.
And where does that tradition come from?
Well, when I started out with it, the references I heard were mostly that that's furniture that the gypsies built.
Interesting.
People talked about gypsies coming through the area during the summer months and camping, and they constructed willow furniture and sold it on the roadsides.
Wow.
You know, and so everything I heard about it was in the past tense. I didn't know what to expect. Would it hold up?
Right.
People wanted it outdoors largely.
Right.
And I knew outdoors it wasn't going to last well.
Sure.
So I actually sold my very first chair. I sold for $8.
Oh.
And the business grew from there. And it wasn't easy. It was a tough go. But with my wife's approval and backing, we were able to do it. I'm just a fiercely independent person.
Yeah.
I had worked as a carpenter for a couple of years.
Okay.
I love carpentry work, but it's like I don't like working for other people. I want to do something on my own. And I guess that's started the whole process. Then when we moved here, I remember my thought was, I need to do something else. I don't want to just continue making willow furniture.
Yeah.
And by then, my mindset was, I want to utilize natural materials and the natural resources we have where we live. What's been nice about a lot of what I do is I don't have a lot of material investment. But that's offset by
time.
A lot of time commitment to it.
Yes.
But I found, at least for me, it was easier to have more time than more money. And it suited our lifestyle and, and that. So got exploring possibilities and reading up in books about what the Native Americans utilized for natural materials to make things, what the pioneers utilized. And we came up with the poplar bark baskets. And I actually gleaned that from two or three different references.
Sure.
Because I didn't quite have the material here that
they
had to do it the way they did it, but it was like, well, I can improvise and do this process to it and come up with it. And then we discovered that you could peel birch bark off of birch trees and came up with birch frames. And so that became our mainstay for a number of years.
Gotcha.
And we actually did about a 10-year stint of where most all we did was my wife, Michelle, made poplar bark baskets. And I made birch mirror frames. And we were cranking them out to the tune of a few hundred a year. Wholesaling to shops around the country. It was good timing. Our kids were getting high school age. And having lived, those who have lived the life of art shows knows it's feast or famine. And tough to have a regular income. And when you're sometimes when you're counting on it, it isn't there. So this was, we knew as long as we were shipping stuff out regularly, checks were coming in regularly. It suited us real well that way. But after 10 years of it, I remember so well sitting in the shop one day working on frames, and it's like, I am so sick of making frames. And my wife walked in, and I said, Shell, I don't want to do this no more. We've got to quit. Otherwise, I'm ready to go get a job. I just don't want to do this. And she was all worried, but we've got all these shops that were, you know, depending on us. I said, hey, they've been in business before we were here. They'll be in business after we leave. I said, okay, we'll just, let's give them till the end of the year, you know, and let them know that, yep, we're going to get out of this and we won't furnish them anymore. And then it was a slow transition into, I got working more with unusual pieces of wood. Much of the time with bark on, not milled stuff.
Like raw, rough edges.
And looking for unusual pieces of wood to work with. That becomes a whole other issue in that first finding those unique pieces, harvesting them, and drying them and prepping them to build something out of.
How much time does that take?
It's widely variable.
Okay, sure.
It's a fascinating thing for me about it is, so I don't always have an idea in mind of what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah.
And I get such a charge out of that. I've had pieces sitting around as long as 20 years.
Wow.
And then one day I look at it and it's like, oh, yes, I know what to do with this.
That's like the marble sculptor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not about, you know, it's like chipping away what wants to be there.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like finding what wants to be there in the piece.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, you might say I had to wait till this piece spoke to me.
Right.
You know? But I find it fascinating, the workings of the brain, that for the most part, I'm not consciously thinking about these pieces, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the difference day to day that one day you look at it and all of a sudden, there it is. This
yeah.
is what I want to do.
That's so neat.
So I really enjoy that aspect of it. That just keeps me collecting pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And, I probably have more than a lifetime supply of stuff at this point.
Yeah.
But along with that is trying to find the really unique pieces of wood to do things with. I found for myself, I was a craftsman most of my career with being self-employed. There's a saying, a worker uses his hands, a craftsman uses his hands and his head, an artist uses his hands and his head and his heart.
Mm.
And I don't feel like it was until several years ago, maybe as long as 10 years ago, that there was more heartfelt into it.
That's beautiful.
And that has continued to evolve and increase to where, for me, when I see someone looking at our piece, they buy it, and I see that joy in them and that smile on their face, that's as meaningful to me as the money in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my heart wants to see, and that's fulfilling in that aspect.
Mm.
So, it's been an interesting evolution.
Yeah.
You know, it's been well over 40 years now.
Right. What I'm hearing you say is that, you know, you there's this ever kind of expanding diversity in your work, it seems like.
Yeah.
Right? Where you start as a carpenter and you are producing something for someone else, like essentially commissioned by someone else or you know, on somebody else's time or something like that, right? And then you move to creating a specific piece of furniture, like willow furniture. And then you spend this time exploring and finding these new techniques, but you're still sort of in this batch mentality, right? And then beyond that, it expands outward into not so much shaping the wood or the raw material to be something that you want it to be, but as you say, letting that raw material speak and being in conversation with it to create something super unique, because your pieces truly are one of a kind, and I don't know that anybody could mistake your style for someone else's, right? You know, as if somebody sees yours and Michelle's work, then if they walk into somebody's house and they see your work, they'll be able to recognize it as yours.
I often think that. I follow a few various woodworkers on Facebook or Instagram. And I know there's people doing something similar.
Sure.
But I don't see it out there. I mean, I don't see much that in the, so I think I do some pretty unique work. And that's, I just have a passion. I recently have had some health issues, so I've been, I'm just about back to my normal now, but okay. It's been over a month that I've been down. And a realization that I had during this time period is I need that creative outlet for my mental health. And that struck me kind of odd. I didn't see it coming, you know?
Right, yeah.
And the realization that, wow, yeah, this is as much about my mental health as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
That's been kind of fun. And like I say, it's a part of how things have evolved.
Yeah.
I have to work for a living. I can't afford to retire. Our shortcomings, being self-employed, my wife and I, we didn't plan for this time of our life real well.
Sure.
But the upshot is I enjoy what I'm doing, and even if I didn't have to be chasing the almighty dollar, I'd be doing this anyway.
Right.
Just because, I don't know, I find it odd. It just strikes me peculiar that I continue to have this passion to do this kind of work mm-hmm. and try to come up with new ideas and find new pieces of wood to work mm-hmm. with. It's been fun. Been fun.
Well, and what a beautiful thing that the thing that you most love to do also happens to be the thing that can facilitate your continued participation in our economy, you know? Like, having those two things be the same thing can be pretty nice.
Yeah, I feel fortunate. I tell people sometimes, we've always lived on the poor side of town, but we've had a really rich life. I think that's what our lifestyle and what we do has offered us. My wife, Michelle, is very talented.
Mm-hmm.
She has a very artistic way about her. And so we've worked well together that way. And she deserves a lot of credit for putting up with me and allowing me to go this route. You know, we built a homestead from scratch when we moved.
Incredible.
To our property, there were no improvements.
Wow.
No electricity, nothing.
Yeah.
We camped for 5 months with three little kids.
Yep.
While we got a house done enough that plastic over the windows and we could heat it.
Yeah.
We moved in like November 12th.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. From tenting.
Cutting it close.
Yep. only to six years later, it burned down.
Oh, no.
And then we spent 4 months camping with then teenage kids.
A different experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And built another house. And we've done everything without a mortgage. Build it as you can. I've collected materials even before we moved here. I had truckloads of lumber and windows and things like that I got for little or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But time, basically.
Yeah.
And that's how we've continued to build there. And now we've got, I don't know, 7 or 8 buildings.
Wow.
So.
Very cool.
Yeah. And it's been our kids who were all involved with it from little on, whatever they were capable of, mm-hmm. they participated.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a couple of years into it, a few years, maybe around 1990, we had an opportunity to get a bunch of pine logs.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided, and it was always an interest of mine, I wanted to build a log home.
Sure.
And so we got trees and cut them down and brought them out to the property, and we had to debark them.
Yeah.
And even our kids, as young as they were, they learned how to use a draw shave, and that was some of their job was
mm-hmm.
to peel. We had, I think it was like 110 trees.
Oh, my goodness.
And had to peel the bark off all of those. And,
wow.
So they've been involved every step of the way, which I think really put a lot of good tools in their toolbox.
Yeah.
So when they were able to, when they grew up and out on their own, I think it instilled some things. I see now them as adults, critical thinking skills, adaptability, dealing with hardships and stuff without getting too bent out of shape,
yeah.
You know, just rolling with the punches.
Resilience, yeah.
And I can see that in them as adults. And they're all pretty independent individuals too.
Yeah. Take after their parents.
Yeah. one has a regular job, so to speak, but yeah. That's been on and off too.
Sure, sure. So. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine the depth of meaning that must just suffuse your whole home, like your whole physical space where you live.
Yeah, we...
there's got to be stories, like, for just about everything.
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
And we built a rather unusual house, very creative and very artsy.
Mm-hmm.
Unusual, we kind of forget because we're there 24/7 and just think, well, it's like everybody else, you know, but we have reminders that, no, which...
And speaking of, is your home the tour stop?
Yes, with the Winding Roads Art Tour.
Amazing. So people have an opportunity to see not only your work, but also the work of your home.
Yeah. Through Viva Gallery. We're members of Viva Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And the Winding Roads Art Tour is largely Viva Gallery members.
Mm-hmm.
And they had asked us for some years about participating, and we just didn't feel like we had a space for it. Well, we had a cabin that a friend of mine and I had built many years ago.
Yeah.
He worked for us for a few years, and he was tenting, and he says, would you mind if I built a cabin? So winter's going to come, and if I'm going to be here, I need my own spot. And I said, sure, pick out a spot, and we'll build something.
Yeah.
And it became storage for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so at one point, I hired my son and one daughter, and they revamped the whole thing, finished it. We added a little porch to it, and it became our studio. And it
Lovely.
Was like, okay, now we have a studio. People come.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a space. We can have our wares and be able to present them to them. And we got asked when we decided to do it was, would you consider opening your house up to tours? And we already had at some level.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a rewarding experience. And through the years, you know, this area's got a lot of young people that are homesteading and building their own place. So everybody's got a little different story, but, you know, the same general context to it. And we've had people, sometimes people we don't even know, say, my name is so-and-so, you don't know me, but we've heard about you and your what you've built there and your lifestyle, and we wondered, could we come out and pick your brains? We're starting a homestead. And
that's incredible.
Yeah, and so we have shared many, many times with other people what we've done. And again, that's a very fulfilling thing for Shell and I to think that if we just inspired somebody, what greater thing can we do?
Yeah.
You know, as human, isn't that what the human experience should be about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we've been able to do that, and so it was fairly easy to open up the house to it. I will say my wife goes through a ton of work because, you know, the windows have to be clean and everything's got to be spick and span.
Yeah.
So it does take a lot to put on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also very rewarding, again, to see that joy on people's face and to know that some people, we've had people come back to us and say, you inspired us so that, you know, this happened and we did this. And, and it's like, cool, that's what this is all about.
Yeah. Ken, I'm so struck by just the real total integration that you have with your life and your creative practice. I think it's really, really incredible. Because and everybody does things a little bit differently, right? And that's why having this opportunity to interview artists and to learn more about everybody's creative practice has been so fun for me personally.
Yeah.
Like this has been a really fun thing for myself as an individual. But I think it's great to allow people the opportunity to sort of like dig into what makes an artist tick and how people work creatively. Some people really thrive on having a pretty firm separation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And being able to sort of compartmentalize, like, okay, in my studio, this is how I am, this is who I am, this is what I do. And in my home, I can like, I can put all of that away and I can like, you know, do things in the rest of my life without my creative practice like overtaking, or, you know, it can sometimes feel a little overwhelming. But you and Michelle have seemingly created this really perfect meshing and integrating of both of those things.
Well, thank you for putting it that way. Yes, I guess we have.
I think that's what makes it so inspiring.
Yeah, I think it helps, yeah. And like I say, I just so enjoy that if I can bring a smile to a face or inspire them in some way that I feel is good, it's like I've done, been doing my part as a human being then, you know?
Yeah.
Like I say, the human experience should be, have more of that going on.
Yeah.
Especially in today's society. It's, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and I grew up, you know, the tail end of the 60s and the 70s, the hippie thing, the Vietnam War, all the turbulence of that time, and... But there was, I mean, I hitchhiked all over the country. Michelle and I hitchhiked all over the country. And you could do that back then without fearing for your life.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would be the case today.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it was that instilled largely who we are today. Yeah.
But it's amazing that you have the opportunity and... At this point, it seems the notoriety to be able to kind of share that energy and pass it forward.
Yeah.
That's well, really neat.
Yeah. That's something else that I find when you get my age, I'm almost 74 years old, you find yourself reflecting more and... You have this, at least for me, this desire to give back to the world.
Yeah.
And I've done some, could be classified stupid things. I've had friends tell me, Ken, what is wrong with, why are you doing this? I spent a couple of years building a cabin for the Driftless Folk School.
Okay.
I supplied the materials. I built it.
Yeah.
The only thing they paid for was materials I didn't have, like fasteners, nails, screws, things like that, roofing. Why I did it, it was I just felt I had this desire and I had this need in me to do it. It was totally illogical.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't afford to do that. But I had this passion to do it. I was on a committee down at Kickapoo Schools for probably around 10 years. And at one point, they wanted to build a kiosk. And through the committee, we got talking about, geez, it'd be nice to do like a turtle and stonework. So I built this, I don't know, it was probably... 20 feet across anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe more. It's stone and mortar, limestone walls in the form of a turtle.
Oh, my gosh.
With a kiosk in the center of it.
Yeah.
And four planting beds then for prairie plants in it. Again, I worked a whole summer on that.
Yeah.
Just because I had this weird desire to do it. So, you know, and like I said, I had friends like, you're nuts, man. Why are you doing that? You know, it's for nothing.
It's like,
I don't know.
You're getting something out of it.
I evidently,
Yeah.
It's and that was intangible things. So,
yeah.
I'm all right with it.
Well, and some people are maybe a little too focused on the tangible.
Yeah.
Need to focus in a little bit more on the intangible. Yeah, absolutely. So as we sort of kind of come back around to the Winding Roads tour,
yes,
happening June 7th and 8th, you've done this for how many years now?
3 years.
Okay.
So this will be our fourth year with it.
Wonderful. And when, where are you located?
We're outside of Iola, about 3 miles on County Double S.
Okay.
On the
well,
ridge.
We'll be able to find it on the map as well.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So your tour stop is your undoubtedly lovely home. I can't wait to see it. I'm very excited. And what will people be able to find when they visit?
Well, we have the cabin, which is our studio,
mm-hmm,
and that's where our goods are. We also set up a 10x10 show tent to, because we need the space to display things.
Sure.
I have my workshop, and that's open for people to check out. And of course, our home.
Mm-hmm.
Our daughter, who is a jeweler, has been there the past 3 years, but I don't think she's going to be there this year.
Oh, bummer.
Just has too many other things going on at the time.
Sure.
And then we have our sugar shack. We make maple syrup.
Nice.
And it's another little building that's really artistically done.
Mm.
I guess it's overkill for something that we use 3 or 4 weeks out of the year.
Yeah.
But it's also making maple syrup, boiling down sap into syrup. It's a social event for us.
Yeah.
Our neighbors are involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
Our son is involved with it and his wife. Our friends come over. We have the amenities. We're in out of the weather. We can cook meals.
Beautiful.
Play games, talk silly.
Hey, that sounds like it's perfect.
Yeah, it really... I like it. I want to do it as much for that as the syrup.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of sweetness also to having it, the social event. And it's a bonding thing with my neighbors and I. We actually, I'll just go into that briefly, 3 couples, all good friends, were looking for land at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And long story short, we ended up purchasing, the three of us, 150 acres.
Oh,
had a surveyor come in and survey,
mm-hmm,
or, you know, split it all up into 3 pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are, like I say, almost 40 years later, still good friends and neighbors.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been sweet.
Yeah. That's very nice. Well, then on June 7th and 8th, people can maybe come and just get a little taste of that sweetness.
Yeah, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Well, thank you so much, Ken.
Happy we could do that. It's been fun to talk to you about this.
Yeah.